You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And it's Friday. It's Brunch with Bernie, the man I think of as America's senator, although having lived in Vermont, I know Vermonters very much are proud of the fact that he's their senator, too. And Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us for our national town hall meeting. We've been doing this for years and years and years now. Bernie, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you here with us. I'm curious, a couple of things. Number one, your thoughts on this Pew poll that just came out on, where Americans are at, basically. And secondly, how's the constitutional amendment going? And I'm sure there's a few other things that you'd like to get into here before we start taking calls.
Well, absolutely. But what the Pew poll tells us, Tom, is that people are becoming more cognizant of the reality that money plays in politics in America, and more aware of the immorality and bad economic impact that the unfair distribution of wealth and income in this country is having. What Pew tells us is that people now understand that there's something wrong when the wealthy, when you have something like 400 wealthy individuals owning more wealth than the bottom half of America. I mean, that is just an extraordinary gap between the people on top and everybody else. And what the Pew poll also talks about is Wall Street and understanding that in many ways what Wall Street is doing is actually harming the economy rather than helping the economy.
And people have figured it out.
And people are catching on. And I think I would credit the Occupy Wall Street movement for going a long way in educating the American people about the role of Wall Street, about the growing inequality in America in terms of wealth and income, about the decline of the middle class, the increase in poverty. Before we can go forward, the American people have got to understand what's going on, and that is we are losing our middle class, and if we don't get our act together, this country is evolving into an oligarchy where a very few people on top have incredible wealth, incredible economic and political power, which takes us to another issue that we're going to be working very hard on and where we need the help of people all over this country. What I see is one of the great political fights of our time, and that is getting corporate money out of politics. I think, Tom, many of our listeners know that 2 years ago, in an absolutely disastrous Supreme Court decision, a 5-4 decision, which in my view will go down in history as one of the worst Supreme Court decisions ever, the Supreme Court came up with a brilliant conclusion that corporations are people. Corporations like ExxonMobil and Bank of America and Goldman Sachs, they're just ordinary folks like you and me entitled to First Amendment constitutional rights, and that in the real world, the implication of that is that these guys can go into their corporate treasuries, take out tens and tens of millions of dollars, sit in a room with other corporations and decide which candidates to support and oppose all over the country and do this without disclosure. They could set up phony organizations so nobody knows who's funding these radio and television ads. To my mind, that is a very serious attack on the whole fabric of American democracy. You know, in a few weeks in Vermont, we have what we call March meeting. It's town meetings. And all over the state, people come together, and you may have 100 people coming out, and they talk about how much you spend on the school budget, how much you spend on the town budget. One person, one vote. What this is about, what Citizens United is about, is Karl Rove, the Koch brothers, sitting in rooms, quietly deciding who's going to get elected, who's not, spending huge amounts of money. So what we have introduced, and Ted Deutsch in the House introduced the same piece of legislation, is a constitutional amendment to basically say corporations are not people, that of course the Congress and state legislatures have a right to regulate campaign spending, and that corporations cannot spend money on campaigns. This is a huge, huge issue, because if we're going to tackle the economy, if we're going to create the kinds of millions of jobs that we desperately need, if we're going to deal with health care in a sensible way, universal health care, if we're going to cut military spending, if we're going to take on the very powerful special interests who today have so much weight, over what goes on here in Washington and state legislatures. We're going to need to get a handle on that. And I would tell the listeners, urge the listeners, this is going to be a long fight. It's not going to, you know, end tomorrow. We have a petition up on our website, sanders.senate.gov, and that petition is gaining a whole lot of names right now. But we have got to strategize and figure out how we educate, how we organize, how we win this victory, which, by the way, Tom, will have support not just from progressives. You got a lot of conservatives. You got a lot of independents out there who feel the same way. Corporations are not people. They should not be able to dominate the political process.
Right. And money is not speech. Absolutely. Thoughts on the defense bill and the postal service? I mean, there's a lot of legislative stuff going on right now.
This is the, you know, the end of the first year of the session, so a lot of stuff is moving pretty quickly. I voted against the defense authorization bill for two reasons. Number one, I am concerned about the civil liberties implication of that bill, the doing away with due process for American citizens. And that's one reason. The second reason, which has not gotten a whole lot of discussion, is thank God the war in Iraq is winding down. We're bringing our troops home. That is a good thing. But there has been very little discussion about the size of the military budget. And this is the authorization bill, not the appropriations bill. But given the fact that we have tripled military spending since 1997, given the fact that we now as a nation spend more on defense than the rest of the world combined, I think we've got to take a very hard look at military spending, do away with weapon systems that are no longer relevant to today's world. And when we talk about deficit reduction, you know, it means not just, as my Republican colleagues want to do, cutting Social Security, cutting Medicare, cutting Medicaid. You know, let's take a hard look at military spending. So I voted against that for those reasons. In terms of the Postal Service, the Post Office, Postal Service leadership has plans which would eliminate about 100,000 jobs in the middle of a recession, would close down rural post offices all over America, close down processing plants, slow mail delivery. I think that those are bad ideas. Working with some other senators, what we managed to do is get a reprieve for the next 5 months to prevent closings and give the Congress the time to come up with ideas for a comprehensive postal reform bill which will strengthen the Postal Service. Everybody knows that the Postal Service has to change. We're all aware of the digital revolution. We know that first-class mail has gone down, email is going up. But I believe there are ways to strengthen the Postal Service, give them more flexibility, deal with some accounting problems that they have with the federal government where they're overpaying, so that we can make our Postal Service, which is just enormously important, especially in rural America, give them the opportunity to be a robust and vibrant institution in the 21st century. So those are a few of the issues we've been working on this week.
Yeah, this is Ben Franklin's invention, and or not invention. I mean, there have been post offices around for a long time before the United States was here, but it was his baby, and it's the second largest employer in America, the largest unionized employer in America, which I believe is why the Republicans put it in their crosshairs.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons, but I want people, and if people have ideas, we'd love to hear them. One of the things you got is every single day we have letter carriers who are delivering mail to 160,000 doors in America. We have post offices all over America. How do we give the post office the flexibility to expand what they're doing, to become more entrepreneurial, to be a better service to the American people than they are right now? Those are one of the issues that we're going to have to tackle.
And a great one. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour, National Town Hall meeting. Your calls for the senator up next.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Call Bernie, 866-987-THOM. 15 minutes past the hour.
Merry-kali-ki-maka is a wise way to say Merry Christmas.
A very Merry Christmas.
A very, very Merry
Christmas.
Well,
happy holidays to you. It's that time of the year. Welcome back. To Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Check out his website at sanders.senate.gov. And Bernie Cece in Pagosa Springs, Colorado, is on the line with you. Cece,
good morning, gentlemen. Good morning. I have a question for both of you. I don't see how it's possible that occupies with posters and petitions online are going to get control of this oligarchy. They've been in power for quite a long time. We have not been a democracy for quite a long time, at least for the last 30 years. How is it possible with a couple of signs and marching and petitions we're going to overcome people who have a charge of our armies, our military, our laws, everything? How is this possible?
Well, Cece, I don't think a petition is going to solve all of our problems. You're quite right. Among other things, to pass a constitutional amendment, we're going to have to get that bill through the House. You're going to have to get it through the Senate. You're going to have to get it through three-quarters of the states. And that's going to take an enormous effort. Political change, real political change, does not come easy. So please do not hear me to say, hey, sign this petition, which I want everybody to sign, and that's going to solve all our problems. What we are talking about, you know, and Chetty raised that issue in the first question, is how you build a movement of tens of millions of people, which demands that the United States government starts representing ordinary people, the middle class, working families, the vast majority of our people, rather than the top 1% who today have enormous power. What I would just simply say to you is this is not easy stuff. This requires grassroots organizing. It requires a whole lot of education, which is why the work that people like Tom Hartman and our other progressive radio hosts and television hosts do are very, very important. But so that you don't get too pessimistic, Cece, let me just tell you this. We have groups out there like Working America who are knocking on doors all over this country. Do not forget that just a month and a half ago or so, in the state of Ohio, the grassroots of that state, the working class of the state, won a major victory against right-wing extremism. Before that, what we are also seeing a growing Occupy Wall Street movement where more and more people are understanding the class dynamics of American society. So I would say to you that it is a very long, hard struggle that the people on top not only have great economic power. These are the people who have shipped millions of jobs to China. These are the people who are down outsourcing and downsizing. They have great political power. We have got to deal with Wall Street. None of this stuff is easy. But as Tom and I often say, you know, you just can't throw in the towel. Despair is not an option. The stakes are too high. So we got to be smart. We got to educate. We got to organize. And we have got to elect people who are going to stand up for the middle class.
There you go. Mark in San Francisco, listening on Green 960. Mark, you are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Morning, gentlemen. I wanted to bring up the fact that I think the biggest assault against democracy right now and fairness is this pledge with Grover Norquist and all these pledgees that have turned their back on America and destroying the middle class. To me, this is the biggest assault we're facing at the moment. We run into it every time we want revenue increase or anything for the middle class. It's Grover Norquist who's running Congress. It's got to be destroyed.
Well, what Mark is talking about, which is absolutely true, is that many, many, many Republicans in the Senate and in the House have taken a pledge. And their pledge is that come hell or high water, they will not raise taxes. But what they will do in order to deal with the deficit, which they helped cause by waging two wars that were unfunded by giving huge tax breaks to the wealthiest people in this country, by passing a Medicare Part D program, which does not allow Medicare to negotiate drug prices, much more expensive than it has to be, and most importantly, by deregulating Wall Street, which caused the recession and the unemployment, and the loss of small businesses and the decline in revenue, those are the causes of the deficit. And now when our Republican friends say, no, we're not going to ask the wealthiest people in this country to pay more in taxes. No, we are religiously almost opposed to doing that. Yes, the top 1% earn more than the bottom 50%. Yes, the effective tax rate, the real tax rate that the very rich pay, is the lowest in decades. Yes, there are all kinds of loopholes that corporations benefit from, but we're not going to address those issues. What we want to do is cut programs, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, education, environmental protection, the needs of the children. That's what we want to do. And I think what Mark is saying is we got to take these people on. We are going to become an oligarchy if so few have so much. And the richest people in this country who are doing phenomenally well have got to be asked to pay more in taxes. No question about that. We have got to eliminate all kinds of loopholes that corporations currently benefit from so that in some cases, these guys can make billions of dollars in a year, not pay a nickel in federal corporate taxes. So that is the struggle, and Mark is right.
Yeah, I did just to that, we pulled together. I had a right-winger on the other day who said he was part of the top 1% and proud of it. And I said, oh, you have a wealth of $13,907,000? And he's like, well, no. And I'm like, you make over $380,000 a year? And he's like, well, almost. It's 200 and something. I said, sorry, you're not the 1%. I mean, people don't even understand, Bernie. It's like the top 0.1%. They have 50% of all capital gains income in the United States. I mean, it's startling. It's just absolutely startling. Sorry to go off here. We just have about, 15 seconds. I didn't want to bring in another caller.
And the good news on this, I know, CeCe called a moment ago a little bit depressed. The good news, I think, in the last year, we have made significant progress in having the American people understand just what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Our middle class is disappearing. The wealthy are doing phenomenally well. We have an incredibly unfair distribution of income and wealth.
Yeah, and that Pew poll is showing it. You're absolutely right. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Sanders.Senate.gov, his website.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
If you get over there, you can sign on to be one of the citizen co-signatories of his constitutional amendment to say corporations are not people. Thank you very much.
And so this is Christmas.
34 minutes past the hour. By the way, we're giving away a copy of my brand new book, The Tom Hartman Reader, today. Jacob is going to pick his favorite post over at the Tom Hartman Facebook page. Make it creative. And we will announce that person at the end of the show. It is our brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders, on the line with us, taking your calls in our national town hall meeting. Reginald in Houston, Texas, you are on the air with Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hey, thank you, Tom, for taking me. And, this is Time Magazine said this is the year they nominated the person of the year, the protester. And I look at that and I say, Bernie, Senator Sanders could be on there yourself, Bradley Manning, and those type of individuals. Thank you for voting against that for eroding our civil liberties that are being eroded. And I fear that but if they take away these civil liberties, will individuals like the protesters, will we be able to stand up and without having going into this detention or be called an enemy combatant? And because we passed this Patriot Act, we didn't pay attention to that bill. We passed the thing after 9/11, we pay attention to that. Is this the same type of focus with this bill going through that's going to erode that? Well, people voices like yourselves and the protesters and us, we will, and Bradley Manning, and that may be a test case to see how that's going. And thank you for everything, Senator Sanders.
Well, Reginald, thank you. And what Reginald is talking about, I think, is that since 9/11, in terms of the Patriot Act, which I strongly opposed, in terms of just the defense authorization bill passed yesterday, the government is taking power against the ability of people to stand up and dissent. And that could be very, very abusive. We live in a country where everybody is entitled to stand up and say what they believe, go out on the streets and protest. And in fact, in my view, we're not going to bring about the kinds of change that we want unless a lot of people are standing up and voicing their opinion and protesting. And Reginald is absolutely right. We have to be vigilant. We have to fight against these attacks on civil liberties.
Tim in Grand Rapids, Michigan. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes. Thanks for taking my call, Senator Sanders. In the state of Michigan, if you were lucky enough to retire at 55 like I have this year, our esteemed governor has laid out a tax plan where he's going to put a state tax on our pension, which we've never had before. And if you're born after 1946, you get taxed from 1946 to 1952. You get a portion of this, your tax. And then after you're born from 52 on, you have a full tax on your pension. This is something that we never been able to vote on. He just jammed it down our throats. And starting January 1, we're going to start being taxed. Is this something that is going to catch wildfire across the nation and have all these Republican Republicans that are running this state,
the governors,
and do that to somebody else?
Yes, I think it is, Tim. I mean, this is what you have. The country is in the midst of a major economic crisis caused by the greed and illegal behavior on Wall Street. As a result of declining revenue, increased health care costs, states all over the country, including Vermont, have serious financial problems. So the question is, how as a nation, Congress, state legislatures, governors, what is the best way and the fairest way to address that issue? What some of us want to do here in Washington is to make sure that the wealthiest people in this country and large corporations pay their fair share of taxes. We want to make sensible cuts in military spending. We want to do away with corporate tax loopholes. That is a way to raise revenue in a way that protects the middle class. And then we can work with state governments to do the right thing. What the right wing wants to do is use the fiscal crisis as a means to attack benefits that working people have enjoyed for many, many decades. And you're talking of just one example. Here's a tax on pensions in Michigan. In other states, what it is, major cuts in Medicaid, throwing people, including children, off of Medicaid. In other states, it will be cutting back on programs for students or senior citizens. In California, for example, as a result of the financial crisis, we're seeing major cuts to what was once the best university system in the entire United States of America, one of the great systems in the world being decimated. So, yes, to answer your question, Tim, all over the country, we're seeing attacks against working people and the middle class, and that is exactly the issue that we've got to deal with here.
Barry in Portland, Oregon, listening on AM 620 KPOJ. Barry, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Oh, yes, Tom. Hi.
Hi, Barry.
Hi again. You're not in Portland anymore, but I am still.
Yep. Nice to hear your voice.
Yes, well, May 9th, Nation magazine had something about this from 3 weeks before Paul Krugman's article, Let's Take a Hike, in the New York Times, about what the Congressional Progressive Caucus developed, this is for Senator Sanders, the people's budget. There are four ways of taxation that are very, very good and adequate to bring in enough money for us, and then there's a single-payer health care clause to it. Mm. So, Senator Sanders, if you could tell me of the status of it, and then please help to get this before Congress and get people to vote for it.
Yeah, we've had Jan Schakowsky on several times about that, actually. Bernie?
Jan, who is the congresswoman from Illinois, is doing a great job.
Yeah.
Barry, back in 1991, when I was first elected to the Congress from Vermont, I helped form the Progressive Caucus, and I'm still a member of it, although I must confess, not a very active member. But what the progressives have done is provided a significant alternative to not only the Ryan budget and the Republican budget, but also to mainstream Democratic budgets. And what they are saying is, yes, we want to deal with deficit reduction, but also we want to create the millions of jobs this country desperately needs. You can do those things if you're willing to take on special interests. So what the people's budget coming out of the Progressive Caucus talks about is progressive taxation, you know, as I've been mentioning all afternoon. That is, ask the wealthiest people to start paying their fair share of taxes, doing away with the absurdity of the capital gains tax, which primarily benefits the richest of the rich, and is now at 15%, doing away with the loopholes that corporations now benefit from, taking a hard look at military spending. investing some of that money back into rebuilding our infrastructure. And when you do that, you make America stronger and you create, over a period of time, millions of good-paying jobs, rebuilding roads, water systems, broadband, schools, and so forth. Transforming our energy system so we don't spend $350 billion a year importing oil from Saudi Arabia and other countries, but invest that in energy efficiency, sustainable energy. In my state, Vermont, we're leading the country, helping to lead the country in energy efficiency. And yet, despite that, we have a long way to go. Many of our homes can see 30, 40, 50% reduction in their fuel use if they were effectively weatherized. Sustainable energy is growing, but not fast enough. So I think in terms of wind, solar, right now in Texas, not widely known, Texas now is producing 10,000 megawatts of electricity from wind. That's the equivalent of 10 nuclear power plants. We could be expanding that all over the country. Solar is growing. We're creating jobs in solar. More solar installations are being put on right now than ever before because solar costs are going down. Price of solar panels is declining significantly. So what the people's budget is essentially saying is, yes, we can deal with deficit reduction without attacking the safety net that is life and death for tens of millions of Americans. Yes, we can create the jobs that we need, but to do that, we have got to be prepared to stand up to Wall Street, corporate America, the military-industrial complex. And I'm proud to be a member of the Progressive Caucus, and I think Jan Schakowsky and others are doing a great job.
Okay. Sophia in Maysville, Kentucky. Sophia, we have just a minute to the break. If you have a quick question, or maybe you could ask your question and Bernie can answer it after the break.
Sure. I'm sorry. I'm out of breath. I had to run up some stairs. We have one chance to get the amendment right. And while Citizens United was only became law a few years ago, I'm just concerned. Sorry. I had an emergency upstairs. Maybe I should, can I come back after the break so I can catch my breath?
Yeah, sure. That's fine. Sophia, Bernie, you want to talk about your amendment?
Yeah, we'll hear what Sophia's question is later. Yeah. But if Sophia is talking about campaign finance reform, there are a number of approaches. I think getting corporate money out, which is what our constitutional amendment does, is very important. But we also have to talk about public funding of elections. It's not good enough simply to go back to where we were before Citizens United. We need to, in a significant way, take money out of politics, move toward public funding of elections so that candidates are worrying about the issues rather than hustling money all of the time.
Absolutely. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, sanders.senate.gov. If you want to see that and sign up for it as a supporter of that constitutional amendment that Bernie's talking about.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
45 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back with more of your questions for Bernie in our Brunch with Bernie hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. TomHartman.com, by the way, for our free live chat room.
God bless all of you who fight our battles on this Christmas Eve. God bless us all. Keep us strong in our faith that we fight for a better day for humankind. Here and everywhere.
I could listen to FDR all day long. Welcome back. And modern day FDR, Senator Bernie Sanders is with us, our Brunch with Bernie hour. Bernie, I asked you, I've been calling your newsletter the Bernie Buzz for a long time, and I think it has a slightly different name, doesn't it?
It's not like, no, that's what it is. It's the Bernie Buzz.
The Bernie Buzz, okay.
We have two editions. One goes just to Vermont, one goes to Vermont and the rest of the country.
Okay, I saw one the other day, and it was like I thought I said the Vermont Buzz, and I thought, wait a minute, have I been getting this wrong all the time? Because, you know, when I lived in Vermont. Anyway, Bill in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and you can get Bernie's newsletter over at sanders.senate.gov. Bill in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, you are on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hey, Tom, thanks. Love your show.
Thank you.
Senator Sanders, two things. I know you hate hearing this, but, boy, I sure wish you'd run for president. I know your position on that. But secondly, I think the Occupy Wall Street movement is the most exciting thing that's happened in my lifetime. I'm real involved in it, and I just want your opinion. Really, pretty much to just say to the people that, I mean, I call me naive, but I think that this movement has the opportunity to change America.
Well, Bill, I agree with you. And here's what's got to happen. I think just a couple of thoughts come to my mind. You know, sometimes people get pessimistic, and I understandably so, about what's going on in this country. God only knows. But when we recall the history of our country, when we recall the fight for civil rights, the fight for women's rights, the fight for environmental protection, things don't happen overnight. I think what Occupy Wall Street has done, which has struck a nerve, is saying, look, we have got to focus on the economic reality of America. Who has the wealth? Is it really, as we read in the papers, evenly distributed? Is the United States a middle-class country? Does everybody in America have all of the opportunity to go to school, to get the health care they need? And when American people begin to think about it and get some information on it, they understand that is not the case. In fact, we have the most unequal distribution of income in wealth of any major country on earth. And social mobility, the ability to move up, is becoming harder and harder. Occupy Wall Street has raised that issue. Occupy Wall Street has obviously raised the issue of Wall Street. And Tom and I could have 50 programs day after day and not even have enough time to go into all of the implications of what that means. What does it mean when six financial institutions, six, have assets the equivalent of two-thirds of the GDP of the United States of America, over $9 trillion? What does that mean to our country, both in terms of too big to fail? Are we going to have to bail these babies out again? Probably. And concentration of ownership. What does it mean when the major banks, handful of banks, control two-thirds, produce two-thirds of the credit cards in this country and are charging people 25 or 30% interest rates, control millions of mortgages in this country? So then you get to the Fed, and we had a very important amendment placed in the Dodd-Frank bill, which gave us some insight, gave us an audit of the Fed during the financial crisis. And what we learned is that trillions of dollars were being lent out to every financial institution in this country, central banks all over the world, at very low interest rates, wealthy individuals. We never knew that. What does it mean that they could bail out large banks and yet can't bail out small businesses, help small businesses, help people who are struggling with their mortgages? What is the function of the Fed? Should it be more active, as I think it should be, in creating jobs in America rather than just protecting Wall Street? So what Occupy Wall Street has done, and I think Bill makes this point, is begin to focus attention on some of the major economic issues. And this is tough stuff, though. This is not even getting women's rights, getting civil rights, rights for African Americans, Hispanics. All that is very difficult. This is much harder, because this time you're taking on all of the big money interest in this country. So I agree with Bill. I think Occupy Wall Street has been very important. But now I think its demonstrations are great, but now we got to convert those ideas, that activity, into political activity. How do we elect people who are going to stand up and are prepared to take on Wall Street and the big money interest, protect Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, fight for working families, stop a disastrous trade policy, which has cost us millions of jobs as companies outsource to China, etc.? So that's where Occupy Wall Street is. It's the thinking about how we expand, how they expand what they're doing into political activity.
And doesn't this mean, Bernie, we have just a minute here to wrap up this hour, doesn't this mean people showing up at, you know, in politics, showing up in movement politics, but also in party politics? I realize you're not a member of the Democratic Party, but, for example, volunteering to be committee chairpersons or precinct persons?
Absolutely.
Or
it means, Tom, getting involved in every level of government. And the truth of the matter is, and we learned this from the Tea Party, that a relatively, compared to our population, small number of people can have a profound impact on the Republican Party. Tea Party has taken the Republicans very far to the right. Can progressives do the same, among other things, to the Democratic Party? Can independents run in states where that opportunity lends itself? So there are, but your point is well taken. It means getting involved in the business of political democracy.
Yeah, it's not enough to just vote.
Right.
And in fact, the day of voting is that's the day when the work begins, not when it ends, isn't it?
Yep.
And so anyway, this is at the risk of devolving into slogans, but this is really where the rubber meets the road.
Look, I understand as well as anybody how tough and frustrating this is, but as you and I have pointed out, as most people understand, we are fighting not for ourselves but for our kids, for the future of this country, and in fact for the future of the planet. And people have got to be involved. There is no other option.
Absolutely. Senator Bernie Sanders, thanks so much for being with us, Bernie.
My pleasure.
Check out sanders.senate.gov. Sign Bernie's resolution or his amendment and sign up for his newsletter.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Anything Goes Friday. Well, there's a little bit of, there's a lot of stuff in the news that I think is worthy of mentioning briefly, and then we'll pick up your calls. Center for American Progress's blog, Think Progress, dug up a fun fact on Ricky Santorum. Please don't Google his name. That when he met his wife, Karen, he was a young lawyer representing the World Wrestling Association. No, I'm not making that up. Strange things. Anyhow, poverty in the United States is getting worse. Half of American families now are either living in poverty or living in what would be considered a very, very low income situation. And at the same time, student debt has exploded. Student debt has exploded to the point where this year it will exceed credit card debt in the United States, more than $1 trillion. So Congress yesterday and today, in an effort to avert a government shutdown, they can't increase the tax on millionaires and billionaires. You know, Warren Buffett's paying his 17%. Mitt Romney's paying his 12%. They're not going to go after those guys. So who are they going to go after? Where are they going to get some money from in order to keep the government going? A lot of people, you know, you get these huge bills. You know, I mean, this is a trillion dollar bill to fund the government and avert a shutdown. And a lot of people just don't notice the stuff that the Republicans slip in there. Well, here's one that the Center for American Progress pointed out. I found this was fascinating. This is something Republicans have been pushing for quite some time. It's in House Resolution 3671. It preserves the maximum Pell Grant at $5,500. Now, Pell Grants are federal grants. They're essentially scholarships. If you're a college student and you qualify for it, for the Pell Grant, and the qualifications have to do with being at a certain low level of income and having the competence to attend a college, they're going to keep it at $5,500, but they're going to change the eligibility criteria in such a way that they're going to drop 100,000 kids from Pell Grants starting July 12th next year. And they're going to run the Pell Grants for 12 semesters instead of 18 semesters, which will knock out 62,000 beneficiaries. And the maximum amount a family could earn and automatically contribute toward an undergraduate education, and presumably have as, you know, tax deductibly, would decrease from $30,000 to $23,000. So basically, what the Republicans in the House of Representatives have proposed and is probably going to be voted into law because it's part of this giant omnibus thing. And it was like, you know, a couple of sentences slipped in that somebody just noticed, like in the last few hours, what the Republicans are proposing is, yeah, we'll balance the budget on the backs of college students. After all, they don't need those fine arts degrees, right? Or those engineering degrees. Hey, we don't need any engineering degrees in this country. We can bring them in from other countries on H-1B visas. They're willing to work cheaper than American college graduates. Why do we even have college graduates? You know, Americans are perfectly competent at saying, welcome to Walmart. Or, would you like fries with that? I mean, why do we need engineers? We can get engineers who say, maybe their English has an accent to it, but so? You know, in their home country, they could, they, you know, being an engineer, $6,000, $8,000, $10,000 a year job. Here, pay them $20,000, $30,000. Why pay an American $80,000 or $100,000 a year? That's the logic of the Republican Party. And they put it into law today. Or they put it into what is proposed as law and probably will become over the weekend. The Senate is going to hammer this thing together over the weekend, and then the House will come back into session on Monday and vote on it. But the Republicans, this is the thing that saddens me tremendously. The Republicans were so unanimous in their commitment to Grover Norquist, to a high-powered, high-priced, high-paid millionaire lobbyist. Here on you know, in Washington, D.C., I was at a dinner party event thing that Media Matters put on sometime back, a few weeks ago, and Grover Norquist was there. And I went over and said hi, shook his hand, and, you know, he's been on our program a bunch of times, but I'd never met him in person. And he's like this kind of schlock, you know, kind of, well, I don't want to characterize him personally in a way that, but if you saw him on the street, you'd think, you know, okay, he's kind of a nerdy guy, and you know, so what? He doesn't look like, you know, I'm a dynamo in the, you know, it doesn't come across that way. He doesn't talk, kind of talks like this, you know, it's, but he's got big money behind him. He's got the money of people who earn millions of dollars a year behind him, and they don't want to pay any more in taxes. And he has succeeded in getting every Republican in the House and the Senate to sign a pledge that they will honor the millionaires in America before they will honor the Constitution. And as a consequence of that, all the Republicans in the House and Senate said, if you're going to try and, you know, pay for anything, extending the middle class tax cut, fixing Medicare, you know, from the damage that was done by George W. Bush and the Republicans saying, you know, yeah, we'll put a drug program in, we won't pay for it, and the government can't negotiate for drug prices. Anything. You want to do anything. If it's going to cost some money, take that money out of those damn kids going to college. Do away with 82,000 Pell Grants, 62,000, excuse me, immediately, and another 100,000 over the course of the next year. Make it harder for families who are in the middle class or even upper middle class, you know, people making 60, 70, 80, $90,000 a year. Make it harder for them to deduct the money that they're paying for tuition for their kids for college. Make it harder for them to give gifts to their kids. I mean, the whole this is incredible. The education organization, Education Trust, said this is going to hit some of America's most disadvantaged college students the hardest. Well, of course, that's what the Republican, you know, it's the Herman Cain thing. Hey, if you're poor, blame yourself. And don't expect the government to help. Because this is a society increasingly where the Republicans and a few Democrats, but mostly the Republicans are saying, we don't give a damn about the poor. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Well, I don't have any bootstraps. Well, then die in the street like a dog. I mean, that was the message in the Republican debate. Ron Paul, well, you know, this guy's, you know, laying in the gutter dying. What should he, let him die. I mean, now Ron Paul didn't say that. It was an audience member. Ron Paul said, well, let the church pay for it. Yeah, the church is doing a really good job of that right now, right? The churches in America have solved the problem of homelessness and solved the problem of uninsured people so adequately, so brilliantly, that we just need to turn everything over to them. Ron Paul, you got it absolutely right. I hope you know I'm being sarcastic. The one thing that the Republicans did, though, is they got the light bulb ban undone. So now you no longer have to have efficient light bulbs. This is one of those made-up Fox News things, right?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I mean, the requirement for efficiency wasn't made up, but the hysteria about it, like, you know, hey, this is a matter of choice, that's made up.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows, anything goes.
Anything goes. Friday, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and literally anything goes. Let's talk about apple peels here. Kyle in Grand Rapids, you wanted to push back on our geeky science alert from yesterday?
Yeah. Say, a few weeks ago, I was watching TV, and on the PBS World News, they were talking about a study from the UK that said that even though all the benefits from the apple skin is where you get your benefits,
right,
that because of the herbicides, pesticides that are being used, and of course the GMOs that we have no idea what is going to be going on with those, you're just better off to go ahead and just peel the skin and not.
Oh, but it's the, you know, the skin is where the polyphenols are. I mean, the rest of it is basically just fiber and vitamin C. And, well, I'm sure there's a lot of other nutrients, but the polyphenols, the things that reduce inflammation, that's in the skin. Why not just buy organic apples?
Right, right. But they said because of how, you know, just like with the soybeans and, you know, it's just how the GMOs have just infiltrated everything now.
Well,
you know,
I don't think they've infiltrated everything. I think if something is genuinely, you know, when I buy apples, I look for organic, and you can find them in just regular grocery stores these days. And I look for the ones that look ugly, you know, the ones that are lumpy, the ones that don't, you know, that look like maybe a bird pecked at them, or maybe even a bug got part of it, and I can cut it out. And then I know that I've got an apple that didn't spend its entire life bathed in some kind of pesticide or something. But, Kyle, I wouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think there is something to be said for an apple a day. But, you know, who knows? Bill in Olney, Illinois. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Yes, sir, Tom. It's an honor to speak with you. The question I had, I was wondering if the postal crisis might be a ploy to beat the workers out of their pensions and insurance. And the other thing I was wondering about, if they're going to close down all these distribution plants with first-class mail in a decline, and they knew that, why did they purchase all this automation equipment, and who were the benefactors from those purchases? Thanks for taking my question, Tom.
Sure. Yeah, thank you, Bill. And I don't honestly know the answer to the whole purchasing, you know, process or who initiated it or how or whatever. I know that the post office has significantly modernized over the last decade, and you know, services improved, and the quality of the variety of products that they offer has improved. What's really going on? Here's what's really going on with the post office. The post office, you have to go back 6 years. To the Bush administration and a Republican Congress, and the post office and the absolute hatred of unions by Republicans, because they know, the Republicans know, you know, in terms of big money. Now, here we live in a political era where basically the people who spend the most money to win an election win the election. So, you know, our elections are for sale here in the United States. And the Republicans know that they can get large amounts of money from rich people and from corporations, but the Democrats still have access to some money. There's two groups that are fairly wealthy, you know, as a group that support Democrats. And those are trial lawyers, people who sue on behalf of you being injured. And some of them make millions of dollars doing that because there's some really awful injuries out there. So there's trial lawyers, and they want to do away with them with what's called tort reform, which says that, you know, if you're injured by a company or a product, the most you can claim is $250,000, period, so that the trial lawyers won't make any money and they won't have, you know, basically it's a, you know, tort reform is a fancy way of saying put trial lawyers out of business. And unions. They want to destroy the unions. Now, you know, they've been quite successful over the last 30 years. When Reagan came into office, about a third of the American workforce was unionized. Now it's down to 8% in the private sector. So, you know, they've been very effective. But there's one union. This is in the public sector. This is you know, government unions. When you add government unions in, it's about 11% of the total U.S. workforce is unionized. The largest unionized employer in the United States of America is no longer GM or, you know, whoever it used to be. It's the post office. They have a 500,000, between 500,000 and 600,000 unionized employees. And the Republicans are looking at that going, that's a union, and the unions will get together and they will, you know, walk door to door for Democratic candidates, and they raise money for Democratic candidates, and they help out Democratic candidates, and they tend not to like Republican candidates who hate unions and always have. And so we've got to destroy that union. How do we destroy that union? We have to destroy the post office. And by the way, if we destroy the post office, that's going to create a little more space for FedEx and UPS to step into the gap. Now, UPS, ironically enough, is unionized, but FedEx is not. So in particular, it'll open some space for FedEx. And I think Fred Smith was the name of the founder and the CEO there. And you know, they'll give us more donations. So they passed this law 6 years ago that said that the postal employees, or the post office, has to fund, they have to have a pot of money in the bank, which is large enough to fund the retirement health benefits of their employees 75 years out. People who have not yet even been born, much less go to work for the post office. That has to be prepaid in a 10-year period to the tune of $5 to $6 billion a year. Now, if you didn't have that, if you just had the post office doing, you know, pay-as-you-go, normal funding of their pensions, the same way that, you know, General Electric does it, or General Motors does it, or the U.S. Congress does it, or whatever, if you just had normal funding of pensions, like everybody else does, the Postal Service this year would be profitable. It would have been profitable. Yes, last year would have been profitable the year before that. So they put this poison pill in to try to take down the largest unionized employer in the United States, and that's what it's all about.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And the solution, of course, and there are legislative attempts to do this, is to undo that insane piece of legislation that requires this pre-funding of the post office.
Feliz Navidad.
Welcome back and happy holidays. Anything goes Friday. Oh, but we have a full Monty alert here for you.
Real slow.
Yeah. No, this started out as a way of drawing attention to how corrupt Ferdinand Marcos was. A bunch of college students ran around naked back in the day. In fact, weirdly enough, I don't remember that demonstration, but I was in Manila the week that Ferdinand Marcos fell, that his government fell. In fact, 4 days in a row, I had a ticket back to the United States, and 4 days in a row, I showed up at the airport, and they bumped me off the flight because Ferdy and all his buddies were flying, you know, getting out of the country as fast as they could. It took me 4 days to get out of the damn country. I shouldn't say damn country. The Philippines is a beautiful place. But in any case, they started this tradition of running around naked to draw attention to how corrupt Ferdinand Marcos and his wife, Imelda, were. And now it's continued at the University of Manila. But now, instead of drawing attention to the corrupt Marcos regime, they're drawing attention to how dirty their rivers are and, you know, the need for environmental remediation. So dozens of men ran naked around on Friday around a university campus, the Philippine capital, Manila, calling for greater efforts to save the earth and clean up their rivers. and they teamed up with environmental groups to clean 20 polluted rivers and streams. They actually went out and did that as well. There were hundreds of onlookers. Mariel Abao, a tourism student, said, whatever their advocacy was, I think it will definitely be heard and exposed. Even though they have a weird way of expressing it, at least the issue is given light. Yeah, he wins the Pun of the Day award, I think. Okay. 866-97-THOM, our telephone number. And David in Wasilla, Alaska. Hey, David, what's up?
Well, I was just concerned about the new bill that McCain had passed, and I was wondering when they were going to designate protesters as terrorists and start shipping them down to Guantanamo, where I served a year at.
Yeah, I think that there's a possibility of that happening if the movement ever gets really, really large and there's not enough political action behind it.
When things get serious and push comes to shove, I mean, that seems like what they're setting up to do.
That's what I'm saying. Yep, I don't disagree with you, and I realize that puts me in a camp with Alex Jones and the right wing guys on shortwave radio. If you look at the history of this country and any other country around the world, if a power is taken by government, eventually it uses it. Go ahead.
Thank goodness the Republicans at least are starting to think about raising taxes, albeit on the middle class, but at least they're discussing the possibility of raising somebody's taxes.
Yeah, well, no, I think they decided not to raise tax. Oh, you're talking about letting the payroll tax cut expire. Yeah. Yeah. Grover Norquist has already said, you know, Domini, 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 you're all, whatever now, to paraphrase the Fireside Theater. He has already said that if they let the tax cut on the middle class expire, so taxes go up on middle class working families $1,000 a year on 160 million people, that's not a tax increase. It's only a tax increase if they let the Bush tax cuts on millionaires and billionaires expire. So
right.
that should give you some clue into
taking my call, Tom.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you, David, for listening there in Wasilla, Alaska. I do appreciate it. Patrick in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Patrick, what's up?
Tom, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
First of all, I'd like to say we ought to scrap Uncle Sam and adopt Uncle Bernie.
Yeah. I think we could have both.
But I would like to propose a poison the people tax. I mean, we got these corporations out there that put these poisons in the products that we buy daily.
Mm-hmm.
And cancer rates are going through the roof.
Yep.
People are getting sick all the time.
Yep.
Why don't we propose a tax on the corporations that are poisonous slowly and fund our health care system?
Yeah, you know, economists refer to this, and politicians who understand this, you know, how it works, they refer to it as capturing externalities. And when I was in Denmark, when we did this show for a week live from the studios of Danish Radio, this was, I think, 3 years ago now, we had a whole series of Danish politicians in, and mostly the more conservative ones. I was curious to find out what they had to say. And one of them was explaining to us why the Danish gasoline tax is a dollar higher than it is in all the other countries around them. Gasoline there is like 11 bucks a gallon. In most of the countries in that region, it's around $10 a gallon. And he said it's because we have a national health care system, and we know that burning gasoline in cars causes, you know, we've done the math, we've done the epidemiology, it causes a certain number of thousands of cancers and asthmas every year, and we all have to pay for that, and it's an externality of burning gasoline, so we're going to put the cost where the cause is. And, you know, there's not a person in Denmark who doesn't understand that. And the fact that Americans don't understand what externalities are, the fact that literally millions of people die in the United States or are sickened in the United States, and particularly children, particularly in low-income neighborhoods, particularly in areas along highways, particularly in cities where highways run through cities and the air doesn't move around a lot, millions and millions of Americans are sickened or killed by our burning fossil fuels, and the fossil fuel industry pays not one penny for that. Is just mind-boggling, and so yeah.
Well,
why
can't we consider this as premeditated murder?
You know, Jacob just said some of us do. Let's at the very least say for the moment it's a necessary evil because you're not going to do away with cars overnight. Although the Danes are doing that. They're taking taxpayer money and they're building a million electric cars, and they're going to, because they're generating, you know, 18% of their power, or maybe it's 30, yeah, no, it's 18% of their power they're generating just in the windmills in Copenhagen Harbor. And at night, nobody's using that electricity, and they don't have any good way to store it. So what they're going to do is they're going to put this fleet of electric cars, a million electric cars on the road, and at night you plug in your electric car and you charge up. You suck down that electricity that's being otherwise wasted, you know, generated by the windmills not used.
Storing it in the car.
Right. And you buy it from the power company at night for, say, 3 cents a kilowatt hour. And then during the day you drive to work and you plug it in and you sell it back to the electric company at 6 cents a kilowatt hour. And you actually make a profit, and it's a way of paying for your car. And the country ends up with twice as much electricity without paying an extra penny. And this is the kind of stuff that we could be doing here. I mean, even what's his name? Who's the billionaire with the wind farms and the T. Boone Pickens?
No,
you know,
we should have been pursuing these green technologies in the South.
No, we should have. You're absolutely right. And Jimmy Carter had so nailed it. Patrick, thank you for the call. Jimmy Carter just totally nailed it. And in fact, Jacob, you got to find that Jimmy Carter clip. I got to share that. Because here, this is what Jimmy Carter said in 1970. What was it? Eight is the Carter 79. It was in what do you have? July 15, 1979. President of the United States, Jimmy Carter. Listen to this.
The energy crisis is real. It is worldwide. It is a clear and present danger to our nation. These are facts, and we simply must face them. What I have to say to you now about energy is simple and vitally important. Point one, I am tonight setting a clear goal for the energy policy of the United States. Beginning this moment, this nation will never use more foreign oil than we did in 1977. Never.
And then he went on to say, and we're going to build a solar energy bank.
Moreover, I will soon submit legislation to Congress calling for the creation of this nation's first solar bank, which will help us achieve the crucial goal of 20% of our energy coming from solar power by the year 2000.
Yeah, 20% by the year 2000, and never again import more than we did in 1978. And at that point, we were importing about 20% of our oil. We're importing more than 50% of our oil now, and we're using massively more. And that was, I'm convinced that speech in July of 1979, 6 months before the presidential campaign got kicked off, that was the point at which the oil companies said to the Republicans, we're going to help you make Ronald Reagan president. And they did. Al in Detroit. Hey, Al, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a comment and a question. My comment is, I have a new definition for AIDS. It's America is dying slowly. Mm. And my question is, you know, they say corporations are people. My question is, if that's the case, who goes to jail when a corporation breaks the law? Because
right.
when I break the law, I go to jail. So if
right.
a corporation is a person, there should be somebody at the corporation who should go to jail as well.
Well, that's why I said we have three criminal justice systems in the United States. One for working people and poor people, where they go to jail. One for very, very rich people, where they never go to jail. They pay fines or they go to rehab, like Rush Limbaugh did. And one for corporations, where nobody ever goes to jail. They just pay fines. And I think what's happening, Al, is that increasingly Americans are realizing that we have three criminal justice systems. It's not just, you know, John Edwards was running around, you know, in the presidential campaign primary back in 2008 talking about two Americas, you know, the rich and the poor. I'd say there's three Americas. There's the poor America, there's the rich America, and there's the corporate America. And the corporate America increasingly doesn't give a rat's ass about America. They're not even about America. They're transnational corporations. GE does more than 50% of its business outside the United States. Is that an American corporation? Bank of America is owned by, you know, 7% of it's owned by, I believe it's 7%. I know it's 7% of Fox he owns. Is Prince Tawan al-Lawid or whatever his name is. He's a Saudi prince. You know, he offered Rudy Giuliani $10,000 and Giuliani turned him down.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
These are not even American companies, you know, in the final analysis. And then they set up hundreds of offshore accounts so they can hide their profits? That's American?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Well, Jacob, you must be feeling totally Christmas this week. It's like all these Christmas bumpers. Welcome back. Happy holidays. Victoria Jones is with us with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by the new book, Self-Empowerment, 9 Things the 19th Century Can Teach Us About Living in the 21st Century, by Ellen Ratner and Ann Gaiman. And Victoria Jones, I see you are in the basement at the White House.
Yes, I am.
So what's going on? And the basement's not such a bad place.
Not bad.
Yeah, not bad. So in the Talk Radio News studio there. So you've been hanging out upstairs, I'm assuming, with the big shots, Jay Carney and whatnot. What's going on?
Well, the briefing hasn't started yet today, but we start with WikiLeaks. A young U.S. soldier, Bradley Manning, who is accused of aiding the enemy in violating the Espionage Act by providing WikiLeaks diplomatic cables, military field reports, and war videos to WikiLeaks, had his Article 32 hearing today. That's basically a hearing to determine whether the prosecution evidence is strong enough to send him to trial, or in his case, a full-scale court-martial. And it ended before it really got underway.
Well, that's interesting. Why?
Very, very interesting. Well, his lawyer, David Coombs, tried to have the judge recuse himself. And this is because the judge, Lieutenant Colonel Paul Almanza, who's an investigating officer, works as a Justice Department prosecutor in civilian life. And Coombs said a number of things. He said he was biased because he works for the Justice Department, and the Justice Department is going after Manning.
And also Julian Assange and WikiLeaks and the whole nine yards.
Exactly, and has got this is going after Assange in Alexandria right now,
right,
to try to get evidence against him. And so because he's doing that, because the Justice Department is pursuing the broader WikiLeaks investigation, any Justice Department employee has a conflict of interest. He also says, so the federal grand jury, that's the word, three words I was looking for. He also says that he has turned down nearly all of his requests for defense witnesses and approved nearly all the witnesses for the prosecution. And so that shows bias as well. And so the judge basically said, well, then that he would withdraw to consider the request and would get back to him. But some other things came up during this as well. First was the disclosure that the defense team unsuccessfully asked for the hearing to be held in secret. And so there was a signal of that. Apparently, it's thought to be that they expect a torrent of unwelcome prosecution claims to be poured over Bradley Manning's head in public with not much chance for him to rebut them, poisoning the well.
Okay, well, before you finish that story, or that piece of that story, did the judge recuse himself?
He hasn't done so yet. They have stopped the hearing while he considers whether he will.
Okay, but they denied Manning's call to have this thing in secret, so
yes.
It wouldn't be a...
It wouldn't be in secret at the moment. At the moment, the judge is considering whether to recuse himself, and at the moment, they have been unsuccessful in asking for the hearing to be held in secret. So anything the prosecution wishes to say about Manning will be public, although reporters are not allowed to report from this live, interestingly. The other thing is that Manning's lawyer started to air the theory that his client's been locked up and harshly treated for the past 18 months in the hope that he would agree to, quote, go over, unquote, and testify against Julian Assange.
Well, that's interesting.
Yes. Yes. And also, interestingly, today, Julian Assange won a further stay of execution, if you like, in his year-long battle to avoid extradition to Sweden. The Supreme Court, the highest British legal authority, agreed to hear his case early in the new year in front of a panel of 7 judges.
The British Supreme Court.
The British Supreme Court agreed to hear Julian Assange's case, saying that his case raised the question of extradition law of general public importance.
That's interesting. Now, in under British law, does the British Supreme Court claim the same right of judicial review that the U.S. Supreme Court does, that they can, that they're the final arbiters of the meaning of the law and of what the law and of whether or not the law is, you know, the U.K. doesn't have a constitution, but it's consistent with common law, I guess would be the way to say it.
Well, it's been a long time since I've been there, but my understanding is that if these law lords decide that he can stay, that he can't be extradited, then he can't be extradited.
But they are the final court of appeals.
They are the final court of appeals,
And how many members are there on the British Supreme Court?
12, I believe, and 7 are going to hear the case.
Interesting. Do they pick the 7 that they think are going to be favorable or unfavorable?
I don't know how they do it.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Pardon my curiosity.
No, it's very interesting how it all works, but I don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
Now they also, British prosecutors raised the possibility today that even if Assange loses his case in February, which is when it's going to be heard, he could still prolong his stay in Britain, possibly for years, by appealing to the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg.
Oh, that's interesting. Because everybody gets it that this isn't about whether or not he had sex with a couple of women. This is about an attempt to get him to a country that is willing to deport him to the United States, whereas the UK won't.
Right, exactly. And where you've got this federal grand jury, now I've remembered those three words, having a hearing right now in Virginia to see whether, in fact, he is guilty in the WikiLeaks case, in a way of which nobody has ever been found guilty before of leaking.
Meanwhile, and certainly there have been. I mean, the most notorious being Daniel Ellsberg's work with the New York Times back in the day, and it seems to me like this is simply a variation on that. But meanwhile, there's been very little of WikiLeaks in the press. Not a lot of stuff coming out. Are they still? And there was some concern that they were going to run out of money. Are they still around and working?
I believe they're working, but they are very concerned about their money, and they've really drawn in their horns over that.
Very interesting. Which would be a British expression meaning they've gotten less active.
They've battened down the hatches.
Yeah, battened down the hatches. Okay, good. A good nautical metaphor that both countries share. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. Brought to you by Self Empowerment, Alan Ratner's new book.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
This is amazing. 50 economic numbers from 2011 that are almost too crazy to believe. This is from the economiccollapseblog.com. And the Federal Reserve recently announced that the total net worth of U.S. households declined by 4.1% just in the third quarter of 2011 alone. One survey found that one out of every three Americans would not be able to make a mortgage or rent payment next month if they lost their current job. Back in 1969, 95% of American men were employed. American men between the ages of 25 and 54. Today, it's 81.2%. Back in 1980, the year before Reagan became president, fewer than 30% of all jobs in America were considered low-income jobs. Today, it's more than 40%. That Reaganomics is working so well. They are just destroying the middle class. I don't know. The list just goes on and on and on. I'll share little pieces of it with you here and there as we go through. But, you know, anyhow, let me pick up some of your phone calls here. Fred in Center Hall, Pennsylvania. Hey, Fred, what's on your mind?
Well, other than tearing the University of Chicago down brick by brick, I have a little idea maybe about how to shame the United States Congress into representing the people.
Oh, the University of Chicago comment. I just got it. You're talking about their School of Economics.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Milton Friedman and all that. Okay. Okay, how do we shame Congress into doing the right thing?
Well, you know, I was really impressed with what the students out at Cal Davis did in terms of the silent protest with
yes.
the chancellor when she was walking back to her car.
Yes.
And I'm thinking about maybe an organized protest around the United States Capitol, just a silent bearing witness to the incompetence of the United States Congress, and just do it 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
Day after day when they're in session.
I think
to the fact that they're incompetent and that they don't care.
I think that would be among the most powerful ways to do it. It's one of the most difficult. This is something that was championed more than a century ago by the Quakers and
yeah.
the Society of Friends. And they did it to protest everything from the Civil War to slavery. And they would, and it was almost always women. Although sometimes men would participate, but there was in the Society of Friends and there were other groups as well. There were these women's groups who would stand and just silently stand there, sometimes holding flowers, or sometimes they're all dressed in black or they're all dressed in white. And I know in the early years of George Bush's war of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars that the women standing silently, there's a name for the group. I encountered them in Seattle several times when I came to speak on behalf of, you know, at gigs that were put on by Seattle's progressive talk radio station, AM 1090 there. And you know, I'd always go up and thank them for being there. And you know, it's just an honor to see people who are so committed. And they would just stand silently as witnesses. We are here as witnesses. And maybe that's the next evolutionary step for the Occupy movement, for example. I'm not sure. We'll see.
I'm not sure that congressmen are even capable of shame anymore.
Well, that's a good point. Increasingly, they're not showing up at town hall meetings. They're not talking to their constituents. I can tell you that, you know, out of the 100 people in the United States Senate, there might be one or two others who would be willing to come on a talk show for an hour and take unscreened, unscripted calls from people that they have no idea who the next one's going to be. And in the House of Representatives, there might be a few dozen who would be willing to. I don't know, but I know the vast majority of them would be terrified to do what Bernie Sanders has done on this show every single Friday for 7 years now, and which says to me, you know, this is a man of integrity and who absolutely stands by his beliefs. And one of the amazing things is when Bernie doesn't know the answer to something, he'll say, I don't know the answer to that. And sometimes he'll come back the next week and say, hey, I looked it up. I mean, it's just those, there are political models out there. You know, there are political role models. And some very, very good ones. You know, Bernie Sanders, Sherrod Brown, Jan Schakowsky, Dennis Kucinich, Barbara Lee, there are Donna Edwards. There are some really good people in elected office, and we need to do more to elevate them, frankly. Stephen in Tampa. Hey, Stephen, what's up? Oh, hang on just a minute, Stephen. I got to click the button the right way. There you go. You're on the air. What's up?
You left out McGovern also. I wanted to talk to you about the Pell Grant that you were talking about a couple segments back.
Mm-hmm.
Before I do, though, about 2.5 hours before I get to that, 2.5 hours ago, I watched the majority leader say that if he's not going to pass the Senate bill that comes back for the 2-month extension or whatever for the payroll tax.
But wait a minute, the majority leader, you're talking about Harry Reid.
No, I'm sorry, not the majority. I'm sorry, Boehner came forward.
Oh, Boehner, the Speaker of the House.
Majority leader.
Yeah.
Yes, sir, that's correct. Sorry about that. Anyway, he came by and said that he wouldn't pass the payroll tax holiday unless it has the XL pipeline attached to it. So I want to get your thoughts on that. But I mainly called because you're talking about how the Pell Grants. And my wife and I both came from very, very poor families. And because of Pell Grants, I mean, we make an excess of $200,000 a year now because of Pell Grants. And that gives us the ability to help our family and, you know, do things for our community and things like that. And so I want to stress the importance. I know that you did an eloquent job doing so, but that these Pell Grants are there to help people that were like us that came from, I mean, nothing.
Right. No bootstraps to pull yourself up by, and the Pell Grants were the bootstraps.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we never would have been able, I mean, I'm the first one, we both are the first people in our family to be able to graduate college. And I mean, she went on to get a PharmD. I mean, she's a clinical pharmacist now at a teaching school here in Florida, at a teaching hospital. And I mean, there's no way for some people to be able to make it. I mean, even people who are in a middle class family still have trouble, at least for the first 2 years before you have to take on $250,000 debt to be able to go through pharmacy school.
Right.
You know, I mean, so there's a huge importance of that in our society, and for us to leave that lacking in our wake, just shows where our morality is as a country now.
Yeah.
Also, I want to get your thoughts on that XO pipeline, because even though my wife and I make, you know, we have a great income, I've already called the White House and told the president that I do not want that tax cut to come in, or that tax break to come in, if it's at the expense of having the XL pipeline. I mean, that's something that I'm not willing to compromise. And also, as far as the apples, you should not promote buying fresh fruits and vegetables at a grocery store. You need to support local farmers like me at fruit stands, as well as farmers markets that are all over the country nowadays.
You're right.
Never, and you get true organic stuff.
Every Thursday, right in front of my apartment building, there's right here in downtown Washington, D.C., there's a farmers market. And you're
get
absolutely
real
right.
Organic.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. With regard to the XL pipeline, Stephen, it is, you know, John Boehner and the Republicans, they are paying the pipers. They're paying off their taskmasters. This is the fossil fuel industry, and the fossil fuel industry owns the Republican Party lock, stock, and barrel. I don't think John Boehner can go to the bathroom without asking permission from the oil industry. And that's true of the entire Republican Party and a not inconsequential fraction of the Democratic Party. And, you know, it used to be that the tobacco industry owned this town. Now it's the oil industry and the pharmaceutical industry and the finance industry. I mean, you know, things change, but it's never the politicians, because the Supreme Court has decided that money is just fine in our political system. And that's the root that we need to pull out. That's the cancer that needs to be pulled out. Stephen, thanks so much for the call, and I much appreciate you listening to us down there in Tampa, Florida. 15 minutes past the hour. We will be right back here on the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And you can drop into our live chat room pretty much anytime you're listening. 24/7, the thing is running, and there's usually somebody there. TomHartman.com. Anything goes Friday. Tom Hartman here with you. Jacob in Guyton, Georgia. Hey, Jacob, what's up?
Oh, hello. First off, like, I'm sort of a new viewer, listener to the show, and I'm going to first off just thank everyone at Free Speech TV for just enlightening the people about really what's really going on, especially younger people like me.
Well, thank you.
But
I'll pass it along. I think you just did.
Okay. I'm going to be a culinary student and coming next semester in January, and I'm really worried about what the Republicans are doing with the Pell Grant.
Are you a Pell Grant recipient or trying to become one?
Oh, yes, I'm a Pell Grant recipient.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to apparently there's about 500,000 that are given out every year, and they want to whack 82,000 out this year and another 100,000 out over the following year. And I would strongly suggest that, A, you tell everybody you know about this, and because this is this budget resolution that they're going to be voting on today and tomorrow and over the weekend, and there'll be another vote on it on Monday. So, A, let everybody you know about it. And you can, if you want the details, thinkprogress.org has a pretty good summary,
Thank you, sir.
And
I don't have many resources.
Yeah, just check it out. Thinkprogress.org is real easy to remember, and they do a great job of this stuff. And then, B, call you have three elected representatives at the federal level. You've got two senators and a congressperson. Now, you're from Georgia. One of your senators is Johnny Isaacson, isn't he? And the other is, what's his name? The guy who I'm sorry, I don't remember the names of your senators. It's been a lot of years since I lived in Georgia.
Okay.
I lived in Georgia back in the 80s. But anyhow, you've got two senators.
It's okay, sir.
I'm pretty sure that they're both Republicans, and I don't know who your congressman is, or woman, but you can track that down. And if you don't know, it should be in your phone book. And if it's not in the phone book, just call City Hall or ask one of your neighbors or whatever. You know, just actually, you can call, if you go to callcongress.org, you can call the congressional switchboard and just say, this is my zip code. Who are the people who represent me? And they will give you those three names, and they will connect you directly with their offices. And just call and leave a message with them saying, hey, wait a minute, don't mess with the Pell Grants. If you are going to mess with them, expand them. Don't contract them. And that's my strong suggestion, Jacob. We need a lot of action on this really fast. Okay?
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, thanks a lot for calling. Thanks a lot for watching. Betty in New Ellington, South Carolina. Hey, Betty, what's up? Betty, you got to listen to your phone, not your TV or radio. Bob in Nashua, New Hampshire. Hey, Bob, what's up?
On the news segment, you indicated that you were not in favor of nuclear energy. And I can understand you're taking that position.
Yeah.
But quite frankly, we've been chasing the wrong horse. Back in the 60s, there was another nuclear project at Oak Ridge, which was a molten salt reactor. It was led by a guy named Alvin Weinberg, who was the designer of that, but also he was the father of the light water reactor. And this was his second time through, and he was going to get it right this time.
Mm-hmm.
And he, told AEC and the senators that this was a much better approach.
Yeah,
they didn't like it, so they get his walking papers.
But there are liquid sodium reactors out there, Bob.
Pardon me?
There are liquid sodium reactors out there. Yeah, there are.
Yes, there are.
And the problem with them is, there are several problems with them. One, they produce nuclear waste just like boiling water reactors do. Number two, sodium, if it's exposed to the air, is combustible immediately. It bursts into flames, whereas water doesn't. So if you had a Fukushima type thing or a Three Mile Island type incident with a liquid sodium reactor, you'd have a screaming, flaming disaster on your hands rather than just a gas leak. Go ahead.
Sure. Again, this is the wrong horse that you're backing here.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm not backing any of them. I think nuclear power is
okay.
The fact that no company would invest in it tells me, without Price Anderson, tells me that it's a bad technology.
Look at thorium fluoride.
As the coolant?
No, as the fuel.
Okay.
Then you have beryllium fluoride and lithium fluoride as the stabilizers.
Okay. All right.
You can go to, if you want to look at a professional group on that, you can go to the Thorium Energy Alliance. You can go to my website for a simpler explanation.
Okay, and that website is, Bob? Shameless plug here?
That is. It's www.greenforoffice.org, green as in the on hand.
Okay. Bob, thank you very much. And I still think that, call me old-fashioned, but sunlight powered all life on Earth and all human activity on Earth up until about 150 years ago. I mean, there was a little bit of coal that was being used, but arguably even that is sunlight. The sun fell on the grass. The horses ate the grass. We rode the horses. The sun fell on the vegetables. We ate the vegetables. We're all powered by sunlight. And then we made this transition to ancient sunlight, to sunlight that had been captured literally millions of years ago in the oceans. It was captured, and it fell to the bottom of the oceans, and that's mostly what we call oil. On land, it was captured by giant plants back during the Carboniferous period. We're talking 300 million years ago. And, plants that were ferns that were 100 feet tall. And when they got matted down and crushed in enormous pressures and tectonic this and that and whatnot, became coal and natural gas. And this is ancient sunlight. I mean, we've been powered by sunlight for a long, long time. And I just think that the power of the atom, whether, regardless of the technology that you're messing with, is unnecessarily complex. The fact that and dangerous. When you look at the fact that they have, just with wind power, which is another really form of solar power because it's sun heat hitting the earth that warms the earth, that and the rotation of the earth that produces wind, right? As Bernie Sanders pointed out earlier, Texas has built 10 megawatts worth of solar power plants. That's 10 nuclear reactors with no risk whatsoever. I think that's the direction we need to be going.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Coming up next, more of your calls and the good, bad, and the insanely ugly right after this. Yep, that would be the good, the bad, and the very, very solecequously ugly. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, food for the brain. The good, the state of Utah. According to the latest IRS collection data, Utah is the most charitable state in the nation. On average, each resident donates about $2,300 to charity every year. That's despite the fact that Utah ranks 21st in the nation in average income. So well done, Utah. The bad. Sheriff Joe Arpaio, the so-called America's sheriff, is actually one of America's worst civil rights abusers. New Department of Justice report details, quote, a pervasive culture of discriminatory bias against Latinos at Maricopa County Sheriff's Office that reaches the highest levels of the agency, end quote. And this is the guy Republicans are climbing over each other to get an endorsement from? I guess it fits. And the very, very ugly Alan West, the Republican congressman from Florida, has a knack for saying incredibly irresponsible things and being one of the biggest rhetorical bomb throwers in Congress. He lived up to his reputation yesterday when he compared Democrats to the Nazi Party. West said if Joseph Goebbels was around, he'd be very proud of the Democratic Party because they have an incredible propaganda machine. This coming from a guy who belongs to a party that has brought us propaganda like death panels, job creators, and wealth redistribution. Luckily, we had only have to deal with West one more year. He's a one-term congressman written all over him. Hopefully, that's very, very ugly. Now, our associate producer here, the guy who brings all this audio to you every day, Jacob Dean, voiced and cut a spot for a friend of ours who is coming to Portland, and I just wanted to share a little piece of Jacob's work with you.
Rose City, get ready, because this year's most popular comedy tour is coming to the Beaver State.
Nice beaver.
Thank you. I just had it stuffed.
The Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Show is blazing the trail to Portland, Oregon.
Stephanie Miller.
There you go. And I just wanted to say hi to Stephanie Miller and give you a gratuitous and totally, totally enthusiastic plug. You're coming to the town where I lived for 5 years. It's a great place. Stephanie!
The first beaver joke ever on the Tom Hartman Show, ladies and gentlemen. Woohoo! I knew I could drag him down to my level.
You done it. So,
King of Portland.
Thank you. Carl Wolfson's now the King of Portland. He is great. When are you going to be in Portland?
January 7th, my friend. And I've knitted you a song to come be a special guest.
Oh, I wish I could. I miss Portland. Although I'm having a lot of fun here watching the freak show that's all these politicians.
Yeah, I tell you what, Tom, every sexy liberal show, we give some of the proceeds from every show to a progressive, you know, a sexy liberal cause. Mm-hmm. We've given to marriage equality and anti-fracking and workers' rights in Wisconsin and all that kind of stuff. I'm thinking we ought to be giving to some of these failing Republican campaigns that are providing the comedy for the sexy liberal comedy tour.
Yeah.
Because what I would give for Herman Cain back, I'm telling you.
Really. That's the thing.
The Newmark Theater, January 7th. We're really excited.
Okay. The Newmark Theater, January 7th. You know, the good news is that they're there and they're funny. The bad news is that they're there and they're funny. Good news is they tend to implode, and the bad news is that they're always replaced by another, which I guess is the good news, right?
I've said this before, Tom. I think you agree, the best field for comedy in my lifetime, this Republican field in 2012.
It is amazing, and you are one of the best comedians out there. Stephanie Miller, the Sexy Liberal Tour coming up. Is there a website for this, Stephanie?
Sexyliberal.com, Sexy Liberal on Facebook, and I have another exciting announcement. Just this morning, we went on, I announced the album, Sexy Liberal Comedy Album, and went on iTunes, and we are the number one comedy album in the country today, and we are number 26 on the all albums already.
That is great.
We just took
great.
Down poor Tony Bennett, I think.
Oh, poor Tony. Well, Tony's a good guy. So. Okay. Well, congratulations. And I just, and for, you know, any of our non-commercial stations that are getting nervous, I just want to say this is not a paid commercial announcement. You're a friend. I wanted to give your tour, I guess, you know, a plug or whatever the phrase is, you know, to say, I think this is, you do a great show and people will love it. And
thank you, honey.
You know, I wanted to mention it. So,
and honey, I plugged every single one of your 1,003,000 books.
Well, thank you, Stephanie.
And the one you probably just wrote during this conversation.
Okay. Okay, it's a fair trade. Stephanie Miller,
thanks
a lot, Stephanie. Great to have you with us. So check it out. And it's not just, you know, not just Portland. I mean, Stephanie's, this is a tour. It's traveling all over the country. So, Byron in Amarillo, Texas. Hey, Byron, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
Well, I just have two or three points I'd like to make about the president's powers. Like you were lamenting that he didn't have much power. He has the power to pardon. He could pardon all the illegal arrested protesters.
He could, presidential pardons are fairly complex. It's buried in the Constitution. You have to already have been convicted, and there's a series of hoops that you have to run through to even be eligible for a presidential pardon. And I don't think that any of the Occupy protesters, I may be wrong, but I don't think that any of them have reached the point of being convicted of a felony, which is what a presidential pardon would require. They've been convicted of misdemeanors, you know, like trespass and things like that, or some of them have pled guilty. So I'm not sure that that's the place for him to go. But he has, you know, on a couple of occasions basically called him out and said, good on you. And I'd love to hear a whole lot more of that. Thank you for the call. Betty in New Ellington, South Carolina. Hey, Betty, what's up?
Hi. I have a question. First of all, thank you very much for taking my call.
Oh, of course.
I'm a recent listener. My son, I'm 80 years old. I'm a federal retiree. And my son, I was so disenchanted with the public channels that he said, well, go to free speech. You like that. And he put me on to you, and I listen
Great.
To you every day now.
Well, thank you.
The thing I was wondering about, a couple of weeks ago I was flipping through channels, and I think it was C-SPAN, and I kind of got in the middle, more towards the end, of a bunch of millionaires that were testifying before Congress stating that they were for paying higher taxes.
Yep.
And I couldn't believe it, and I've been waiting to hear more about that. There must have been 10 or 12. They were billionaires, not millionaires. And
some of them were, yeah.
Do you know any more about that at all?
I do. I know one of those guys. We had another one who was, you know, who wanted to be very public. We had him on our TV show last week, and when he was in town. And there's this group of, they call themselves patriotic millionaires. They're all people who earn over $1 million a year. So it's not just
so
that they've got a millionaire. Yeah, it's not just that they've got $1 million. These are serious millionaires, people who are genuinely rich. And they are coming out and they are saying, raise our taxes. You know, we would rather, and it's the, I think it's the perfect metaphor for this is back 6 months, a year ago, something like that, there was this video floating around of this, of an American reporter interviewing a German businessman. I think it might have been on Bloomberg and in some other country. And he kept saying to the guy, you know, and the guy was very wealthy and German industrialist. And he kept saying, you know, how much taxes do you pay? And the guy was like, oh, I think 57%. And the American reporter just couldn't wrap his brain around it. You know, it was like, how can you stand paying 57%? And finally, after like the second or third time he asked this question, the German businessman said to him, I do not want to be a rich man in a poor country. And so I am pleased to pay that tax.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I must have missed the time that you had the fellow
on
there.
Yeah, but you can find him over at our website at tomhartman.com. The video is all up there. Grace, I have to move along, Betty, I have to move along, but thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it. It's great to hear from you. I want to get in as many calls as we can here before the end of the hour, and there's a whole bunch of folks. Grace in Wilton, California. Hey, Grace, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Yes, this is, in fact, Grace Cooper. And what I wanted to talk about, because it drives me batty, is this idea of personhood. So I was thinking about it. I've had 4 children and 5 miscarriages. I'm getting to be an expert on this. If a fertilized egg is, from the moment of conception, a person, then do pregnant women get to vote twice when they go in to vote? Because they're carrying another person with them.
Maybe, except most states have laws that make it illegal for you to vote on behalf of somebody else. I know when I lived in Oregon, you vote by mail, and Louise and I would sit down to vote by mail, and the form says very clearly that it's actually a felony. It's a go-to-jail crime if you fill out somebody else's vote-for-mail form. So
okay, well, yeah. I'm just being silly, because, you know, you're supposed to be 18.
Well, also the fetus would be under 18. Jacob just pointed that out to me. You've got so.
But I just thought, okay, I'm carrying this person with me.
Yeah.
And I vote for him too.
But it does, you know, the idea of and this isn't corporate personhood. This is the anti-birth control, basically, personhood. It's not even, I don't think, the anti-abortion kind of personhood. The idea that a fetus should have full rights at the moment of conception is, you know, raises a lot of it becomes very problematic. I mean, at what point does the mother have to have her life endangered before an abortion could be considered, or does it turn women basically into toaster ovens? You know, do they? No, seriously. The law that was proposed in, what was it, Alabama, Mississippi, whatever it was, that law would have. If a woman was fertile, a man could come along, and it wouldn't even have to be her husband, could come along and say, you know, she's fertile, so there's a possibility she's pregnant and doesn't know it, and she's in a bar having a drink, and so I'm going to we're going to go to court and have a man assigned to watch her 24/7 to make sure that she doesn't do anything that might harm a fetus, even before she knows for sure that she's pregnant. Because, you know, typically it takes a week or two for maybe longer for a woman to realize that she's pregnant. So, Grace, it gets very confusing. And thank you for the call, and thanks for raising the issue. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And we're giving away a copy of my brand-new book, The Tom Hartman Reader, just out. Jacob is going to pick out a post from the Tom Hartman Facebook page, and we'll share that with you right after this break.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to my associate producer, Jacob Dean, our video director, Jim Javinsky, to our phone screener, Julie Luly, our screener researcher, Paul, and our writer-researcher, Sam Sachs, to Alva Goldbook for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, to our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, to everyone at the various companies that syndicate our program, Dial Global on commercial radio stations, Pacifica Radio on non-commercial radio stations, Free Speech TV on Dish Network and DirecTV, all the cable providers who carry our show as television, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Networks, and all the others around the country, to Monica Ashby, Dennis Trunoff, Don Rojas, and all the other great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on the big picture, to Rachel in Santa Fe, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, to the folks in our chat room, to Ellen Ratner and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, Jay Goodman Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you. And officially, Jacob has made a decision. A tip of the hat to Philip Foggiano, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, who is getting an autographed copy of my latest book, The Tom Hartman Reader, for posting a comment of the day on our Facebook page. Philip wrote, "The Republicans have a new flavor every month. First it was Banana Bachman, then Peachy Perry, then Rhubarb Romney, then Caramel Cane, and now Nutty Newt. What will January's flavor of the month be?" Indeed, Philip, who knows? Well done. And as they say, the book, The Tom Hartman Reader, is in the mail to you, autographed by me. So hope you enjoy it. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number, and Matt in Carson, Washington. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Well, Tom, I wanted to talk about that Canadian pipeline.
Yeah.
I'd like to steer you to a story in the August National Geographic of this year. It's called Pipeline Through Paradise, and it's the American pipeline is just an alternative. They want to stick I think it's called the Gateway Pipeline through the Great Bear Rainforest and out into BC, Canada.
Right, through the Western Rockies, and they're getting a lot of blowback from British Columbia.
Yeah, then their alternative is to ship it down to Texas, and they are expanding the Panama Canal, so it can take the biggest ships in the world.
Because the goal for this oil isn't so that Americans can be oil independent. The goal for this oil is to get it to Asia.
It's going to the Republic of China.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, anybody that thinks it's going to stop in the U.S., they would go to a refinery in, oh, I think there's one in Montana and the Dakotas, where they could refine that oil right there. And it would go into your car. So anybody that thinks it's going to stop in the U.S. is deluding themselves.
No, no. And this this is all about getting the oil to China. And I believe that there's a few other Asian buyers. And it's also all about the transnational oil corporations who don't give a rat's patootie about the United States. And they just want to make the money. And the Republican politicians they own. Matt, thanks for pointing it out. Sam in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. How you doing, Sam?
I'm doing all right. Sounds like we're bought out by foreign people.
I think so. And not just us. It's happening all over the world. Countries all over the world are signing into these trade agreements and basically surrendering their national sovereignty. I think it's a mistake. Other people think it's a great idea. You know, we can have a difference of opinion, I suppose, but I think it's a mistake.
I just want to make a comment about the Goebbels Road. They got the same personality, like, except Rove, man. He's more smarter and sneaking.
Paul Rove. Karl Rove, yeah.
On propaganda things, you know.
Yeah, he's very
key. Yep, he was the brains for Bush and them.
Yes, the title of the book, Bush's Brain. It's all about it. And excellent point,
good
Sam. Great to hear from you, and great to hear a little spunk in your voice. I'm glad to hear that you're feeling.
Hear you on TV, man.
Okay, good.
You're what we need in the world. You know, okay. More like us.
Thank you. And we need you to get better fast, Sam. Thanks a lot for the call, Jim in Weston Grove, Arkansas. Hey, Jim, what's up? Jim. Okay, Jude in Gig Harbor, Washington. Hey, Jude, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to call in reference to the gentleman that called about possibly doing a silent stand around the Capitol building.
Mm-hmm.
And if I may, I wanted to engage your kind of visual memory back when you would come to Seattle for 1090 for our town hall meetings. And on the stage, Mike Malloy was kind enough to be able to put those black combat boots with flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember those?
I remember it well.
Well, that's part of our organization, and it's an individual movement by women, and we carry those boots and flowers wherever we go, and it's really quite a statement, and we engage, and so many different people come up and want to know, because they don't quite know what to do with us. You know, we'll stand in front of entrances to the federal buildings, and right now we're going to start doing some movements out at Fort Lewis McChord Air Force Base. So I just wanted to thank that gentleman because it is very powerful, just being still and standing.
I think it's the most powerful. It's the essence of nonviolence. I mean, the ultimate demonstration of nonviolence and protest and righteous and moral indignation. Did you see the video of the students who were standing silently as the chancellor of the University of California, Davis, had to walk out to her car
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It was chilling.
In fact, I sent
an email to her, and I got a reply, and I had mentioned about the organization Women Standing and how, you know, how we had aligned with that. Because when we saw that video, women went out and did stands.
Yep. Does Women Standing have a website?
It does, Tom. Thank you. It's the plural, womenstanding.com.
Okay, so there's two S's?
Just one.
Word, women so. As in W-O-M-E-N, E-N
correct.
Rather than
one
A-N.
Word.
Yeah.
Correct.
Right. Okay, womenstanding.com. .com. Great.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You very much,
thank you
Jude.
Very much.
And thank you for your work. As I said, I've encountered Women Standing on a number of occasions, and it is powerful, powerful moral statement. Coming up next on the Tom Hartman program, there's going to be a rumble over voter ID. One conservative is actually saying the left wants voter fraud. What? Plus the truth about the GOP's dastardly redistricting tricks. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. Occupy something. See you on Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.